Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Food banks and charities across the country are gearing up for Thanksgiving tomorrow. Many say they cannot keep up with demand from homeless individuals, homeless families, and those who can't make ends meet. Even though we often hear about an economic recovery, homeless advocates say the number of new homeless people and homeless families is on the rise. According to a U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development report, San Jose and Santa Clara County posted the nation's fifth highest homeless population. It also ranked among the places with the most chronically homeless and homeless children and young adults. California has the largest homeless population in the country with over 136,000, an increase of 4.5% over last year. And those are official numbers. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about how the economy is affecting the homeless population and those on the margins. What is it like to be homeless now? Who's at risk of becoming homeless? How has the tech boom affected the lives of people at the margins? And how are government officials responding? Today, we are joined by Tina Collins. She was born and raised in San Francisco. She's a mother of three, and she's battled homelessness throughout her life. She recently experienced what she says was an illegal eviction, which forced her to live in her car. She turned back to substance abuse, and her kids were taken away from her. Through working with the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, Tina moved into transitional housing and regained custody of her kids. But she says she often lives in fear of losing everything again. And Tina joins me here in studio. Hi, Tina. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Nice to have you.
Thank you.
And you brought your kids in, and we're going to hear from them a little later in the show. Aaliyah and Star. And we're also joined today by Brian Mullins. He's a resident at the Father Alfred Center, which is a transitional housing, drug, and alcohol treatment inpatient program at St. Anthony's. That's a service center for San Francisco's homeless and low-income communities. Brian is formerly homeless, and the Father Alfred Center is helping him with job skills and supporting him while he looks for employment and stable housing. And Brian is also in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Good morning, Rose. Thank you.
Jennifer Friedenbach is the executive director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Through protest and advocacy work, the coalition works to make sure that homeless people have a voice in policy discussions at City Hall and beyond. Jennifer has been with the coalition for 18 years. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for coming in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So we want to talk about what's going on in Northern California. San Francisco is an interesting place to look at because the rents in San Francisco are now the highest in the country. We have surpassed New York City. And I live near Golden Gate Park, and I'm seeing so many more homeless people there at the BART stations. What are you seeing? How has this economic boom really affected the homeless population here?
Well, we've seen massive displacement, and so that's one of the big things that's happening. And so people are losing their places to live, and it's happening. You know, we're looking at Ellis Act evictions are up by 170%. Overall evictions are up by 40%. We have people who are just being pushed out of their units without being evicted just by being offered a buyout or being threatened with eviction, who don't know their rights. And they are sometimes ending up having to move out of town, but many times end up being destitute and having no place to live. And so this is it's a huge emergency right now. And the other thing that's happening is as more affluent people are moving in, the tolerance is much lower for the very presence of poverty. So poor people are being hit by a lot of different sides. Recycling centers have been closing left and right. We have even DPW is going at with the police department and doing these sweeps every morning at 4:30 a.m. They're squirting down homeless people with high-powered hoses. All of this in response to complaints coming from more affluent people moving in to more traditionally low-income neighborhoods.
Can you talk about how this is affecting services? Because a lot of people think, and you can tell me if this is true, that people come to San Francisco because so many services are available.
Yeah, there's a very small percentage. The city homeless count looks at that, and about, you know, if you tease it out, it's less than 2% of people come here for services, and a very small minority of people come here homeless. More typically is what's going to happen is you're going to have people who are from San Francisco. This is where their community is. They get displaced out of San Francisco because of the increasing rents. They may go elsewhere for a while, and then when they get in trouble, they'll come back home because this is where their support system is. And then other folks will come here for jobs, and then jobs don't pan out, and they're not born and bred. But, you know, more people who are a much higher percentage of native-born San Franciscans are in the low-income and impoverished communities than in the higher incomes. And so it's much more typical for people to come here at the higher ends.
And Tina, you're a native San Franciscan. Before we get into your personal story, talk about the changes that you've seen and experienced over the last few years as so much money pours into this area.
Well, I haven't seen to go towards, like, you know, people like for myself, that's a single mother that has diagnosed problems. I have not seen no rescue for them type of people, single parents, far as getting a place. I just recently learned, and I've always thought low income was 30%. And then when I was at the coalition, Jenny taught it, no, it's subsidies. It's called subsidies. And for me, being raised up, I've always thought it was low income. So when I go get a low income application, I'm expecting that it's 30%. But then the application started changing because it's saying to get a low-income place, just a regular amount of rent, it's like maybe they're paying $3,500 a month for a two-bedroom. And so for low-income, you sign it, your rent is like $1,500, Aaron, or $1,800. Some just go up at any time. So what do you do? Do you move in that place with a person? For instance, my daughter, she was working for a company that came to the city, she worked the whole month. But then when it opened up, 2 weeks into it, they only start working four hours a week. So how do I just move into a place like that and going to be homeless again? Because anything can happen, you know. And that's like saying to you, to anybody, you know, saying, oh, well, that's just those people. But it's not just those people. Life happens, and it could happen to you. It may not happen right now, but it can happen 10 or 15 years down the line. And you have to be, you just have to be alert, you know, into judging people. Don't judge people just because they don't have a place to stay, you know. And that's very uncivilized for children, kids, not to have a place to stay. And we don't have enough family shelters right now, really, because you have families sleeping in cars. You have families that that don't even want to submit that they're homeless. You have people that you run into every day. You may know they won't tell you they're homeless. They may be sleeping on their friend's couch or something because people is blind to it. And I used to be blind to it, but now I see because it's so many people. It's so many people. And I was raised and born here, and I just can't believe, you know, that I cannot get a place here now.
It's just too expensive.
Yeah. And what Tina was talking about, too, in terms of a direct result of the rising incomes in San Francisco, and there's this big disparity. So we have huge numbers of people that are impoverished and then huge numbers that are very affluent. But what that means is the median income goes up higher. So when she's talking about not being able to afford affordable housing, that's a direct result of what it's based on is median incomes. And so if you have a lot of people at the high end, that brings up the median income higher. Mm-hmm. And that makes the affordable housing less affordable. It's just it's the way that it ends up working from the affordability standards.
At a time when we're seeing the average rent for an apartment within 10 miles of San Francisco around $3,500, this is for about a one bedroom, $2,500 a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's like
what? What is the status of affordable housing?
We have, you know, the state ended up cutting redevelopment agency and shutting that down. In San Francisco, the redevelopment funds are actually used for low-income and affordable housing really substantially. So we lost a huge amount of the affordable housing pipeline. There's a lot of stuff that we'd like to get developed in the future that's not. At the same time, public housing in San Francisco, the San Francisco Housing Authority is deeply troubled in terms of its financial stability. And so even though we passed a housing trust fund in San Francisco a year ago, that money is now going to go towards the Housing Authority just to keep those units up and running. And so we really don't have a lot of exits out of homelessness, and that's putting pressure on the homeless population as well.
And Brian, you're a resident at the Father Alfred Center, which is a transitional housing, drug, and alcohol treatment program at St. Anthony's.
Yes, it is.
What changes have you seen over the past couple of years?
Well, you know, there are quite a few factors that would lead one to become homeless. In my case, it was behavior, behaviors with addiction, you know, with alcohol and other substances. You know, with my experience with that, you know, I wasn't able to hold a job. I wasn't able to live and pay rent. So as a result, I became homeless, and I used. I was aware that San Francisco had many organizations that would help a person with, you know, difficulties like myself. You know, as so with, you know, others out there. I found out about the Father Alfred Center, and I entered, and you know, looking back, I can see that there are many people out there that need housing that can't afford it due to unemployment. The services that they do offer, such as general assistance, isn't that much to actually pay rents for a decent living environment.
What about the changing economy? How has that affected your experience?
Well, I see a lot of larger companies moving in, and they are offering jobs, employment to people that qualify for those positions. You know, there are many people in the homeless population that either don't have the skills, you know, have other behavior problems. Those companies aren't necessarily looking for that type of person, which is bringing in, you know, people from other areas that qualify, and they're being housed. It's taken away from people, you know, of lower incomes like myself. The rents are going up. I mean, they're skyrocketing. And I feel that the rents are going up for people who can pay. And it's really unfortunate because you have a society within San Francisco that cannot afford those high rents. And where do we go? Where do we place these people? They're being driven out.
Brian Mullins is formerly homeless. He's now a resident at the Father Alfred Center, a transitional housing, drug and alcohol treatment program that's run through St. Anthony's. We're also joined by Tina Collins. She's a mother of three. She's battled homelessness throughout her life. Through working with the Coalition on Homelessness, she moved into transitional housing. And Jennifer Friedenbach is executive director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. And on today's Your Call, we're talking about how the changing economy is really affecting the homeless population and what it's like to be homeless. I mean, we're seeing a massive tech boom in so many parts of California, rising rents, costs are going up. So how is that affecting homelessness services? What is it like in your area? If you live in Silicon Valley, what are you seeing? Again, there's a new report out from HUD that found San Jose and Santa Clara County posted the nation's fifth highest homeless population. It ranked among the places with the most chronically homeless and homeless children. If you live in Santa Cruz, what sort of changes are you seeing? And if you've ever battled homelessness, how has the economy affected you? What changes have you seen? And also, if you're working with an organization that provides services, How is the economy affecting what you're able to provide, and have you seen demand increase? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if you just want to share your overall observations about the changes you've seen over the past few years, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Harry in San Francisco. Hi, Harry. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose.
Good morning.
And I wanted to comment that here in the Inner Sunset, I saw something very interesting. There's this neighborhood, these members of this neighborhood association have been putting up these benches for people to sit on, and there were two right by the parking lot, and homeless people were sitting on them. So I saw a night, they have a bulletin board that they've plexiglassed off part of, and behind it there's a notice saying the police asked us to remove these benches because they might prevent the homeless from getting the help that they deserve. We just can't stand by and let people destroy themselves, or words to that effect. I don't have it in front of me because it's out there on the street. And I wanted to comment that these neighborhood associations, the Inner Sunset Park Neighbors, the Haight-Ashbury Improvement Association, I believe the one in Coal Valley is also called the Coal Valley Improvement Association, campaigned to end close the Hank Recycling Center successfully because they felt like homeless people were able to stay in San Francisco because they could sell these things. Reality is you see a lot of elderly Chinese, for example, who can't make ends meet otherwise, going through these bins, and they're now closing down every recycling center in San Francisco. Jennifer, I know, is conducting a campaign against that because all the Safeways have evicted them. And Scott Wiener is celebrating this, and also the closing of the parks at night is also a way of fighting homelessness. There's a real war going on here, and people need to be aware of that.
Well, thank you for calling, Harry. And the San Francisco Board of Supervisors recently voted to shut down parks from what
12,
time, Jennifer?
12 midnight to 5 a.m. Parks and plazas.
Parks and plazas.
Yeah, so no more stargazing at Washington Square Park or, you know, hanging out at a plaza after you catch a late show.
Well, what other changes are you seeing in terms of how the city is responding and policies that are being implemented?
You know, it's getting uglier and uglier, and I'm really glad that Harry made those comments because, you know, there is a belief that if you make it as uncomfortable as possible for people, they'll simply disappear. We've tried that over and over and over again. We've actually got, you know, more than a dozen laws on the books over time that have been passed at the ballot, at the police commission, all these different places that specifically target homeless people. And when folks have no exits out of homelessness, they're not going to disappear. And that strategy just doesn't work. What it does do, though, is keep people homeless for longer. They can't get into housing because they get a warrant out for them because they can't pay a fine for, say, sitting or lying or trespassing. And I think one of the things that is a really interesting one to look at is this struggle that's currently ongoing around placing a shelter in the Bayview. And there's currently about 50 some odd primarily African American men who were displaced out of the Bayview, mostly elderly, sitting up all night in chairs that have no place to sleep, and they want to open up a shelter next door. And the neighbors are saying, let's basically have a campaign, new neighbors that have moved into the neighborhood that say, that are calling it actually, ironically, Protect King Pool. And it's mostly almost all white neighbors on that side. And so it really has illustrated the disparity and I think the insensitivity to the African-American community and the historical significance of integrating pools, for example. And their whole thing around this is protect the pool because this shelter is located a half a mile away from it.
Yeah, the shelter idea is a great one, I think. But maybe we can go a little further. You know, maybe we can build more affordable housing.
Absolutely.
You know, that shipyard is such a big piece of land. And I had this thought. I said, well, maybe they can just develop all that for low-income families, for, you know, below market rate. It wouldn't be that hard to do. I mean, if they wanted to do it, they could actually do it. And then we have this land here at Treasure Island. You know, it's a nice piece of land that can also be developed for people that can afford that property, you know, at a lower income. So there are definitely things that can be done, you know, if they choose to do it. Also, the services, you know, in San Francisco are great. You know, they will get some people into housing should they do the necessary things that need to be done as far as what that organization has them to do. But then again, they won't be able to house everyone. They won't be able to help everyone, only those that that seek help. You know, and then again, you know, there's a great population of homeless people that have problems with, you know, addiction, you know, and I believe you need more organizations to address that issue first.
And these all go back to policy changes,
yes,
right? Government officials having to take action. And Jennifer, you've got a lot of contact with government officials on a regular basis. With the changing economy, are you finding that, I mean, what changes have you seen in terms of how politicians are responding to these issues?
You know, it's really in a lot of ways a missed opportunity right now, and hopefully things shift because all this money's coming into San Francisco, we have more money to do exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah.
We can do the affordable housing. We can do this. We can have actual substance abuse treatment on demand, which I was involved in that campaign for many years. Instead, what we've seen since 2007 is Department of Health has cut their behavioral health by over $40 million. Mm-hmm. There's been huge primary health care cuts. So instead of increasing access for folks, we've been regularly decreasing it. And that is all about, like he said, it's all about political will.
And even so, like, even I feel that the politicians that have been put in for the last couple of years have really just did us dishonest. Because even with the, some of the new hope stuff, they're tearing down project housing and building new stuff. Well, they're getting these management companies that's coming in, and I don't understand how could you just say, for so many years, the Bayview, the Fillmore, and all these places have been killing fields and so on, and so you come in with a developer, you tear down, and you say, oh, this is how it's going to go now, but you never sent no rescue into the community. You never sent services into the community, you know, and it's like, that's dishonest. I mean, when they tear these places down, they should say, okay, if we're going to hire you for a management company, you have to do this for 5 years. We need built-in case management at the complex. We need to have people where these people can get services because we have had no services.
I agree.
All through the whole Bayview, the Mission, all these different places because we was infected with crack cocaine, which, you know. But no services have never came into our communities. And for those kids, their parents, grandparents raised these kids, it changed. So then it changed from using drugs to they killing. But you can't send services in. But then when you send these other services in, you said, oh, this is what's got to happen.
Yeah.
We got to push these people out. We're not going to do low income. We're not doing this. Oh, it has to be like this. But you never send services to help the community first.
Yeah, it's
you just put your foot down and said, this is what it's going to be, and this is how. You never addressed it. So now you address the stuff and you fix the stuff up. But for years and years, grandparents and aunts had said, we need this to be done in our neighborhood, but you didn't do it. But now you're doing it, but you're kicking us out.
And Brian, I know you want to step in, but we're going to take a quick break. I'll have you respond right after the break. That is Tina Collins. She's a mom of three, born and raised in San Francisco. She recently experienced what she says was an illegal eviction, which forced her to live in her car with her kids. Through the Coalition on Homelessness, she moved into transitional housing. Brian Mullins is a resident at the Father Alfred Center, which is a transitional housing drug and alcohol treatment center. And Jennifer Friedenbach is the executive director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call is always better when more people get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, here's the number to call, 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. If you'd rather write, you can send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll rebroadcast a conversation we had with Lori Silverbush, co-director of A Place at the Table. It's an incredible documentary that focuses on the growing hunger epidemic in the U.S. Over 50 million Americans, including one in four children, do not have access to enough nutritious food to live a healthy and active life. So we'll talk about what explains this and what it will take to eradicate hunger. And then on Friday, we'll rebroadcast a conversation we had with longtime media reform advocate Robert McChesney about his book, Digital Disconnect, How Capitalism is Turning the Internet Against Democracy. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about how the changing economy and the influx of technology companies, the tech boom, is affecting homelessness and people living on the margins in Northern California. California has the largest homeless population in the country, over 136,000 people. That's an increase of 4.5% over last year. And according to HUD, San Jose and Santa Clara counties posted the nation's fifth highest homeless population, also ranking among the places with the most chronically homeless and homeless kids and young adults. And we'd love to hear from you. What changes are you seeing in your area? If you're in San Jose, Santa Clara, Santa Cruz, how has the changing economy affected the homeless population in your area? If you're homeless or maybe have been, what changes have you seen? And then if you work for a nonprofit that works with these communities, what would you like to tell us? What stories can you share? What services are available and how are services affected during these times? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And then if you just want to tell us what you're observing, I mean, I live near Golden Gate Park and have seen a lot more people in my neighborhood during the week. Usually it's on the weekends, but now I'm seeing a lot more people during the week. And in BART, a lot more people sleeping on the ground. So what have you seen over the past year or so? Today we're joined by Jennifer Friedenbach, Executive Director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Tina Collins recently experienced what she says was an illegal eviction, which forced her to live in her car. She turned back to substance abuse and her kids were taken from her. Through working with the coalition, she moved into transitional housing and regained custody of her children. And we are joined by Brian Mullen. He's currently at the resident at the Father Alfred Center, which is a transitional housing, drug and alcohol treatment program at St. Anthony's. And let's hear from, I'm sorry, Brian, you wanted to first comment when I wanted to get that from you first, when Tina was talking about programs.
Yes, I did. Yes, I originally got clean in 2001. Through St. Anthony's. At this time, it was the treatment facility was named Seton Hall. And since then, I did suffer a relapse. But I've noticed a decrease in some of the services offered, you know, for people like myself, people in recovery, people that have, you know, problems with behavior and addiction. And as a result, you know, we've had a number of we've lost funding for a number of programs, you know, that deal with this, that treat people, you know, that can help people. And I see more people like myself back on the street, you know, not getting the help that they need because of the decrease in these services. I personally feel that this is a disservice to the center, to the city. I believe we need more funding for organizations that deal with people like myself, people that have problems with addiction.
I agree with him because, like, before I, you know, went through what I had went through, I had lost my therapist that I had for 13 years. And by me just losing that therapist that supported that I need, because, you know, a lot of us go through stuff when we kids too. And so we've been traumatized, but they have fixed it where our children don't have to go through that. Mm-hmm. But how do we supposed to get services if you keep on snatching them away from us? And it's something that we need to hold on to. Not just saying, okay, we're going to give services and we need you to go see a therapist. But you go see a therapist, which is a student, and you're seeing that person for 3 months to 4 months, and then they switch up. And then what? So this is was they have fixed up for me where I could see this therapist. And I seen her for 13 years. And when I lost that relationship, it was a void, you know, and things started happening to me, I didn't want to be socialized with, didn't have a doctor, wasn't taking my meds, and it's very important that these type of services need to continue to happen, not just taking them. You know, they just recently closed the women's program, that the Irish Center.
Yeah. The Irish Center.
You know, and you know, you and I went through the Irish Center. I graduated there, and I graduated there twice.
And what is the Irish Center?
The Irish Center is a drug treatment program for women, mm-hmm. and it's an outpatient program. And so they closed that program. I was like, wow. And it's not that many. Outpatient programs for women.
And we lost Smith, do you talk? I mean, pretty much all the women's program at this point are gone.
Yes.
Why?
Primarily, it's a variety of reasons, but primarily it ends up being around budget cuts. And so if, for example, you know, even when a program's, you know, going out and going under, the city does not choose to use that funding to replace it and open up a new program, they end up applying it to, you know, their deficit that they're facing. And I just want to just emphasize this whole connection. And Tina started talking about it, between that folks don't usually make, but the connection between mental health and substance abuse. And when you look at addiction
homelessness.
And homelessness, mm-hmm. of course, yeah.
Yes.
But
and traumatized.
When people have access to accumulated wealth, they do not have to worry about being homeless. And there's many people who are mentally ill that are very affluent that will be taken care of for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
And as well as people with addictive disorders. But the issue is that if you're not having access to mental health treatment, if you have post-traumatic stress syndrome, you know, witnessing severe violence or other things that happen in extremely impoverished communities in the United States, if you're a woman and you know, you've experienced rape, all these different things, and then you don't have access to mental health, what ends up happening is that people start self-medicating with drugs and alcohol,
yeah.
and they end up developing addictive disorders. For example, if you're bipolar, it's not a great way to do it, but you can use speed and it will even out your ups and downs. Mm. And then you'd have these other problems associated with it. And so for most people who have severe addictive disorders, there is an underlying mental health issue that is not being addressed. And in San Francisco, our mental health service has been devastated, and not just since 2007, but it's been a continual track, actually since the 1970s. That has really affected the health of people.
What would you say, Brian, to people who walk by homeless people on the streets but might not have any experience with addiction or a mental illness and just don't understand how prevalent it is?
I would suggest that they get involved with it, do a little research so that they can know. Addiction plays a great role in this city and in homelessness. There's this population, and you have people who don't know about addiction, and they see and hear about behaviors associated with that, like maybe stealing, robbery, the violence associated with that. And they don't want to hear about it, so they would rather the homeless just go away.
Right, because you often hear about aggressive panhandling.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it does happen.
Right.
And no one wants that element in their neighborhood. We don't want it. But what do we do about it? We help these people. We learn about it. We give them the means, some help to help them out of that situation. We do what we can, I think that's a problem that really needs to be addressed, and at many levels it is being addressed. I personally personally feel that more can be done.
We have a caller from San Jose who wants to talk about what he's seen. Let's hear from Andre. Hi, Andre. Welcome to the show. Hi, Andre. Did we lose Andre? Andre wanted to say that he's seen a lot of tents in the San Jose area. So, Andre, if you'd like to call back, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you live in that area, what changes are you seeing? If you live in Santa Clara, Santa Cruz, what are you seeing? What's changed over the years? How has the economy really affected the homeless population and those living on the margins? And then if you also just want to know about, you know, what are the realities of being homeless, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think when you see people on the streets or see these tents that are popping up in many cities in Northern California? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jennifer Friedenbach is Executive Director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Brian Mullins is a resident at the Father Alfred Center at Transition Housing, Drug and Alcohol Treatment Program at St. Anthony's. Tina Collins is a mom of three, and she has battled homelessness throughout her life. She's now in transitional housing. Let's hear from Amber from Albany Bulb, who wants to talk about the economy and the impact on homelessness. Amber, can you just give us an update on Albany Bulb and talk about what's happening there?
Yeah, the city of Albany is trying to evict us being currently 49 otherwise homeless individuals from where we have lived peacefully for about 20 years. There's been a population here. I myself have been here for 7 years with my boyfriend. And it's on the end of a peninsula that sticks out into the San Francisco Bay off of the East Bay city of Albany. It's a closed landfill. It's been reclaimed by nature. You know, I go to sleep to the sound of wind. I wake up to the sound of birds. My health has improved since we moved here. It's peaceful. It's quiet. The police patrol through here regularly. You know, we're on a smile and wave basis with them. It's not like there's lots of crime, not any more than there is in your average neighborhood, possibly less. And the city of Albany has decided that this is not a park in its current state, and that we all need to be removed. It's a park that hundreds of people use daily. Literally hundreds of people daily walk their dogs out here. They bring their kids out here. Classes of students of every age come out here and play and learn. And the city of Albany has decided that I guess we're a blight to what park they want to have here. Mm-hmm. And they are trying to Allison.
And Amber, talk about the changes that you have seen with the changing economy in Albany.
Wow. Well, when me and my boyfriend moved here on October 31st of 2006, with the addition of myself and him, we made it 15 people out here all total. And like I said, now we're back down to 49, but we were at 70 a few months ago. People living out here, that is. The number of people living out here has definitely increased as the economy got worse. You know, crackdowns on homeless people and on places where homeless people sleep, and the economy getting worse and there being more and more homeless people, it's a recipe for there being more homeless people anywhere that there is homeless people.
And what stories are you hearing from the people who've recently joined you? What's their circumstance?
A lot of them lose their place to sleep because police evict their entire encampment, and they trickle here from encampments all over the area.
Hmm.
You know, pretty much. I mean, there is definitely not anybody living here that would not be homeless if they didn't live here. That seems to be the impression that the city is trying to convey to the public, is that there's people who choose to live out here that could live anywhere else, and there is not a single person living on the Albany Bulb that would not be on the streets if we didn't live out here on the Albany Bulb.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Amber. And you can find more information about what's happening at the Albany Bulb at our website, yourcallradio.org. Thank you, Amber. Let's go next to James calling from the Mission in San Francisco. Hi, James. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rose. And shout out to Jennifer Friedenbach. This is James from the SF Homeless Group.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, James.
I just want to offer my observations. Both as a long-term resident, having grew up here and went to Burlingame High, and I've been raised in San Francisco in the Bay Area for 35-plus years, I've noticed dramatic changes that were absorbed in general when people spoke up and rallied and had good information, and we could, you know, fend off a lot of this stuff. This last wave has been a strategic plan from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
They sent people in to the board of supervisors, paid them off. They're getting into the policies. They got rid of the benches. They got rid of, they got sit and lie. This is a complete methodical plan on how to gentrify an entire area and basically pave the way for an inflated, artificially inflated upper middle class that think they're all that, but they don't realize they're the next wave of victims, that in the future their pensions are going to disappear, their jobs are going to disappear. These markets are inflated and deflated by the top down. They control when the markets drop. And so this last wave has been horrendous. After Occupy, we sensed that some type of Homeland Security expertise has gone into the police department, and they are, at the Occupy demonstrations and whatnot, they were breaking ankles and breaking wrists. That's a form of violence. Those people didn't run away from town. They still stay here. So even if you beat these people down, people come here because they want to be here because of our creative energy and the inherent values that our city has, not the glitz and the glamour. People come here for tourism for that, but we've got such a huge population that's been served for so long. This big money comes in here. Chase Bank buys up the 10 largest commercial properties in the city, and they drove out all of our upper middle class business sectors and drove them into the ground. Our creative energy would have been the competitors against the mega corporations that they, that we are giving property away here. How are you doing? And this is a complete war. And if we don't recognize it as such, and if we don't stop talking about homeless people as being someone different other than ourselves, because most of the homeless people I've met worked in the city and paid taxes wherever they're from for a lifetime before they were, their zip code was decimated or their job was out.
Well, thank you for calling, James. I mean, the reality is this isn't stopping. I mean, you're getting more companies coming in, especially in the Tenderloin, and a lot more money coming in. Jennifer, is there a dialogue going on? Because I know that companies like Twitter get a tax break, a payroll tax break, in return for reaching out to the community, which some board of supervisors say they don't even really know what that means. But is there a dialogue between homeless advocates and, you know, nonprofits and these companies?
There is an attempt to dialogue. What's happening with, they did get the tax break in the mid-market area, and they were, part of what was written into that legislation was, is that they were supposed to have the, you know, some community benefits in return for that tax break, but it wasn't specified exactly what that would look like. Some of the companies are doing better than others. I mean, I would say, you know, one of the things is the tech companies do not reflect San Francisco. I mean, in terms of ethnicity and diversity of San Francisco at all. But, you know, so that ends up being a problem, of course, in terms of who's hired into the companies. But the other piece is that, you know, some of them are doing a little bit better than others. But, you know, like Twitter, for example, their idea of a community benefit is paying their employees lunch to go out to restaurants and then write Yelp reviews. So that has not been particularly helpful. So, you know, they should be giving back a lot, and they're not, and they're not acting in a socially responsible way for the most part. Of course, there's exceptions.
They do, you know, like a volunteer day, right? Once a month.
They're sending employees out to volunteer, but that's, you know, that's not as helpful as actually investing in community, in really addressing the social issues in a systemic way. Mm-hmm. You know, Salesforce has been doing a lot, and they've been pushing, and that's been awesome. They actually had a huge impact on family homelessness with an investment they did that they got the city to match that involved the employees giving monies. And if the, you know, the rest of the tech companies did that, we actually could go a long ways in addressing this crisis, a long ways.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you just quickly, what would you want from a company like Twitter? Recently went public. Their valuation at a peak was around $30-40 billion. What would you want from a company like that?
I would say a multi-million dollar investment. They can afford it, and they should ask their employees, who are very high paid, to match it.
Well, maybe we can get Twitter to develop the Bayview for low-income housing.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, $1 billion, to do that, it would be a fraction of that.
Yeah. They, I mean, these companies collectively could afford it. They could afford to actually pull, I would imagine, every poor person in San Francisco out of poverty.
Exactly.
And they could do it through investing in housing so that their housing is affordable. They can do it in creating jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of different pathways to address poverty, but it's not rocket science.
And just to go back to say, if that's something that they can do right now. Right now, I feel that each district supervisor needs a family shelter in their neighborhood. Mm. They also need a shelter. They need a place where, because people get homeless, you can stay in tips.
Four bus rides away.
Yeah, but right. Four bus rides away or at near the beach or somewhere, and you get homeless, you're stuck. You don't know where to go at. Mm. And the place right now is to go is to the Tenderloin.
And for many, and it's one shelter one night and another shelter another night and maybe no shelter on
you
the third
You have to call
night.
In. So right. If you're calling in to get a bed, you may get a bed, you may not.
So it's a different system for families than what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But for families right now, the wait just for a shelter is 7 months.
7 months?
Yes.
7 months for a family with kids.
So what are they doing?
So in the meantime, they are staying in garages, doubling up, living in their cars. I mean, it's a whole variety of situations, moving from place to place.
For emergency, for a bed. You have to call in. Start calling in at 11 or 12 to get a bed. So if someone beats you, you and your family's
right. Staying at churches on the floor. That's, you know, on the gymnasium floors of churches. There's some convents and different places that are taking people in, but it's really chaotic. And the impact on the kids is incredibly dramatic.
Well, speaking of shelters, I hear that they're probably going ahead with this shelter in the Bayview over close to Mother Brown's. You know, I feel maybe we can go to these tech companies with all this money and say, hey, why don't you donate and make this happen? Maybe we can, you know, talk with our supervisors, the mayor, and say, hey, make this happen. It's definitely a shelter there is definitely needed. You know, it would help that community a lot.
Well, we've got a number of callers on the line. Let's try to go through a few and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Santa Cruz and see what's happening there. Hi, Faye. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Yes, in Santa Cruz, the homelessness has become absurd.
What are you saying?
I mean, truly absurd. Well, in the last 5 years, Santa Cruz has lost all major blue-collar employers, like you know, even long-time employers like Lipton and Birdseye and many tech people. And through gentrification, the housing has become so expensive that if you don't have an incredible credit report and you know, you're just not going to be able to rent unless you can double up with five people in a potting shed. Because of that, and also, of course, many people are older that are homeless. They are women over 45 or 50, and they're the last in line for a job.
Right.
So it's so absurd that we have like Facebook pages. There was a woman that was burned up in her car in front of a friend of mine's house. She lit a candle, and everybody felt very sad about it too, because she was a younger woman. If she'd been older, people, I guess, would probably cared less. In the San Lorenzo Valley at night, up Highway 9, I live. Off the grid up in the mountains, and if I have to drive from Santa Cruz, there's like packs of people that migrate with their backpacks and shopping carts up Highway 9 at night to escape all the curfews. And a lot of this could be avoided if they a lot of these people are, some of them have like only one leg or, you know, are obviously disabled. Yeah, to get disability is impossible if you're poor. You have to have a lawyer, and you have to have been the money to see a doctor.
I think
medical care just here does not happen.
Thank you. I thank you for calling in, Faye. I think another show would be to talk about how people get benefits and how easy or difficult it is, because I know there are a lot of misconceptions out about that. So thank you so much, Faye. Let's hear next from Chris in the East Bay. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi, so my name is Chris Douglas, and I'm a directing attorney at the East Bay Community Law Center, and I run a clinic called the Neighborhood Justice Clinic. And I just wanted to make a couple points on the lack of shelter and the criminalization of homelessness. So our clinic sees people every day who get what we call quality of life infractions for things that they really have no control over. You know, the top three citations that we see are for essentially sleeping, loitering and sitting. So like laying down, standing around, and sitting around, things that, you know, if you have a home, you take for granted. We see a lot of smoking citations, a lot of open containers and things like that. And, again, these are all things, if you have a house, it's not a problem. And the worst part is that there's such selective enforcement. And if and the process by which people get these citations dealt with, there are too many organizations that help with that. And it really it turns into this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy where they're actually unable to enter shelters and treatment programs and stuff like that because they end up having all these warrants for these citations, like jaywalking, for instance, which, you know, in downtown Berkeley, there's 30,000 undergrads that are jaywalking every day, but only my clients, my homeless clients, are the ones that are being cited for that.
And Chris, you know, you're actually going to get the last word because we've got about 30 seconds left. How has the economy affected your clients?
So, well, you know, the economy, you know, has definitely affected them. You know, it's affected them in the sense that, you know, there's less access for them. I mean, they've always been on the outside looking in. So while the haves, the Googles and all these .com people are making a lot of money, and it might have helped sort of the overall economy, their economy, and the access to shelters and the availability of shelters, that hasn't improved at all. So when the economy went bad, a lot of services closed, and now the economy is getting better. We're not seeing those services reopen. For example, there's a shelter.
Well, you know, Chris, I'm sorry. I have to cut you off because we're out of time, but we will definitely continue following this. There is an event tonight at the Harvey Milk Plaza to focus on housing. It starts at 7 p.m. Jennifer Friedenbach, Executive Director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, Brian Mullins, and Tina Collins, thank you all so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What are the economic, social, and cultural implications of hunger? On the next Your Call, we'll rebroadcast a conversation we had with Lori Silverbush, co-director of A Place at the Table, a documentary that focuses on the United States' growing hunger epidemic. Over 50 million Americans, including 1 in 4 children, do not have access to enough nutritious food to live a healthy and active life. So what explains this epidemic, and what will it take to eradicate hunger? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be right back.